This episode is presented by Shaxbury Cider.
Hi, I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup.
So every day the shutdown continues to grow is another day that there will be a backlog.
This week, we're looking at the unexpected ways the government shutdown has impacted our food system.
There are nearly 1.6 million New Yorkers who rely on SNAP to feed themselves and their families every single day. There is a real impact on our friends and neighbors.
A lot of farmers rely on commodity loans at the end of the year. Since the offices are not open, those loans aren't available to them.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, buddy. Welcome back. You're just down in San Antonio with a bunch of other
Texas
buddies of ours at San Antonio Cocktail Conference.
Yeah, man. It was a great time. Have you ever been?
I've never been. I wanted to go this year, but I had too much stuff to do here in New York.
You're a busy man.
I learned from watching you, Dad.
It was a great time. You know, and
how was your seminar?
It was really cool. I called it Nothing is Free.
Yeah.
And we talked about how I believe to my core that comping drinks and giving things away.
Did you have like November
is,
Rain from Guns N' Roses,
yes,
like playing in the background?
Of course. I believe that's detrimental to the business. I believe it's actually when you give something away, you actually take something away from your guests. So it was a topical discussion to have with a room full of bartenders who are, you know, and business owners who are, we're all really entrenched in this notion of giving stuff away for free, and, you know, and we don't have to be.
Right.
So it was a good talk. People enjoyed it.
I don't think you should ever give anyone something that they ordered.
Yep, that's part of it too.
You know?
Yeah, if they ordered it, they intend to pay for it.
I mean, you give something, if they order something, you give it to them, but you don't give it to them for free. You know?
Correct.
I like to send extra stuff out.
Lanyap, a little something extra.
Yeah. That's better hospitality, I think.
Indeed.
What else is going on? We're in the middle of a government shutdown. I don't even know if I'm going to get bit. Like, I'm going to have to take off my boots through security because TSA pre-check ain't working.
Yeah, man.
Some
it's
shit like
it's
that.
Difficult. It took me 13 hours to get home from Texas.
God.
A little bit of that was TSA related. Most notably, we sat on the tarmac waiting to get to our gate, not to take off until when we got here. And we sat there for an hour and a half. And then when we got off the plane into an empty terminal that was already closed and the gates were already down, and we had the whole plane stood there for about another 15 minutes waiting for someone to come and raise the gate so we could get out of the terminal. That's never happened to me before.
Jesus. Wow. What
and also, it's affecting beer.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
I read a couple of articles. Yeah. The government shutdown means that there's no one, you know, in looking at labeling and food and drink. But then all of these craft beer makers, I'm sure Jimmy's talking about it on his show, all these craft beer makers who make these special releases that people literally line up on the sidewalks to get a hold of.
Places like Other Half. That,
Other
like
Half
every
and Evil Twin and all those guys. Suddenly they have all this beer that they've made, but they can't get labeled, so they can't sell it. So suddenly there's a ton of beer. Some of these people are just giving it away, which sucks. I just said nothing is free.
I was going to
don't fucking give that shit away.
Nice callback.
But they can't charge for it because it can't be labeled.
Right.
So unless they have a bar of their own, and even then I think there's some stickiness involved. You got to label it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing's happening to wine, too, but I'm more concerned with beer than wine.
Well,
speaking of beer, I'm having one now.
Yeah. And cheers.
Cheers to you, buddy. Good to see
welcome
you.
Welcome back.
Who's in the studio today?
Well, we have kind of a full house, right?
We do.
We've got some tiki glassware, but we also have a big bottle of gin. And
let the games begin. January. Fuck dry January. It's January.
I can get behind that.
Yeah. I hate that dry January bullshit. Listen.
We talked about this last week on the show.
I'm going to talk about it again.
We should.
Because it's still January.
I've been telling people all about
it. It's bad for business, people. It's also bad for you. I think if you want to do something in moderation, turning yourself off of something for an entire month and then switching it back on is bad for your body. Instead, why don't you pick a day of the week and go that whole year of not drinking on Tuesday? That's 52 days over the course of the year. That's moderation, right? This
and it's
stopping
almost two
for
months
a month is
of not drinking.
And then you don't have to feel so bad if you slip up for a day because it's somebody's birthday or whatever. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, yeah. In the studio today, Simon Ford of Ford's Gin.
How's it going?
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's always good to see you. You've always got a great smile and welcoming personality. And I think that's part and parcel to why you're so good at your job.
I also have
Which is what? I don't know what your job is.
I also have a free bottle of gin.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we're paying for it in some way.
Oh, yeah.
Incrementally, just like your sobriety.
And then we got Ed Riddell and his dear wife, Sasa Tong, in town from Indianapolis. He's got a great podcast called Shift Drink. You should listen to it. I listen to it all the time.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Good to see you. And you also own a couple of restaurants over there. What are the names again?
We run Black Market, Rook, recently opened the Inferno Room, and then my wife runs Siam Square. It's a Thai restaurant.
Rad.
Keep them busy.
Empire.
Very, man. It's,
yeah.
You know,
glutton for punishment.
Empire builders in a market that's probably underserved, right? Do you think Indianapolis is underserved, or are you meeting the demands?
I think we're meeting demands. Maybe more so. Than is necessary. I think the supply right now is probably outpacing the demand, but it's definitely underrepresented.
Yeah. Well, you're here to represent.
There we are.
Simon, what's going on in your life?
A lot. I mean, last year was probably one of the busiest of my entire career, and I hit that diamond medallion in June.
I feel like, wow, okay, half the way through. But I feel like you're the type of guy, I'm the same type of guy, do I say that every year? Last year was my busiest year, next year will be this year. Like, it just gets busier and busier, the dial keeps going up. Is that true for you?
Yeah, I mean, you constantly challenge yourself to do more, be better, you know, increase what you do, but then you can't let go of the things you've already been doing, so right. it just constantly evolves, and it's great. I mean, you get creative, you create a new gin, you want to launch it in a new country that you've never been to before, and it's exciting, and it's hard to say no to that opportunity. So, and yet you're still doing what you're supposed to do on a day-to-day basis, so you just sort of pile it on and hope it all works out and that you don't burn out.
Yeah, let's rewind the clock a little bit and talk about who you are and what you've done and created for our business. Like, You sort of hold the mantle as kind of the first brand ambassador in America, right?
I apologize wholeheartedly right here and now, but
but that's true, right?
I often get credited with it. I think before me there were brand ambassadors, but it was very much you would bring in a stereotype, like, you know, you'd have a Scottish guy in a kilt for a single malt whiskey. oh wait, I'm a British guy doing an English gin. Sorry, rewind.
Yeah. you fell prey to your own circumstances.
But we. You know, I came to the USA, you know, to launch Plymouth Gin 2002, and I didn't really get incorporated into the business that was already in existence in the US. So they said, well, you can be a brand ambassador. And so I didn't really know what that meant or what it was. And so I made up my own job and my own role. And that began with, I know what my job is. It's going to all of the best cocktail bars and bringing them this gin and telling them about it. And then the more I got into that moment and that movement, I realized that people were very interested in learning more. And I think back in 2002, product knowledge wasn't as, you know, as widespread as it is now. So being able to tell the story of gin was sort of new to a lot of people.
It's basically the original flavored vodka. That's what everyone, that's how I learned, you know. But actually,
juniper citrus vodka? Yeah, I love it.
But honestly, that's how a lot of brand education started. It was like, all right, so it's kind of like this, but it's that. And it wasn't really so in-depth as far as, you know, whenever we talk about any of our distillates, we talk about actually, like, how high proof we, you know, steeped all the botanicals, and like at what point did we distill it down to and then dilute it to because of this reason, you know, like there's a lot more math that's transparent for the consumers and for the on-premise people these days. And it has been that way since, you know, about 12 years ago when it really started popping that way, especially when I feel like a lot of American whiskey distillers were like trying to sell their product, but then they were like, they didn't want to divulge too much information, and then they felt like kind of like strong-armed into it.
Made with a secret ingredient that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
You remember those days?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What is the government allowable bugs per parts per million? Yeah, that's the secret ingredient.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it must, like, starting out, it must have been kind of crazy, like writing your own program and like writing, just figuring out what the job was, because it wasn't really there. You didn't know how much information to give, how much was too much or too little.
I remember distinctly one of my, you know, first account visits with a bottle, and it was a building site. You know, you talked about building sites on the show the other week, actually. But you know, going into the building site of the Flatiron Lounge, which is of course the bar that recently and sadly closed.
R.I.P. Flatiron. R.I.P.
And that was the day I met Julie Reiner, and I walked in with a bottle of Plymouth gin, and I didn't know what to expect. And there was a guy walking in with a blue Curacao or something around the same time who was completely missing the mark on his position and his job. And there he was with this gin, and of course it worked out very well. You know, Julie and I became great friends and introduced it. And I was like, this is how...
Was this guy a plant? Did you plant him?
I should have done it.
You're like, hey, buddy, you work for me now. You keep that one bottle of Curacao. You follow me, but you go in first.
That's why you own five.
That's kind of genius.
Yeah. Here's a 20. Pick Patino's card.
My favorite part of the job back then, though, was this cocktail movement was emerging. It hadn't really existed. Milk and Honey had opened, Angel Share. Here I was at the opening of Flatiron Lounge. Pegu Club would come next. I was watching it roll out in front of my eyes, and I only know in hindsight how lucky I was to have seen that. And that was just through the job of being a brand ambassador. So, God, I mean, you know, a bottle of gin, you know, allowed me to see something very special that our entire industry is, you know, talks about a lot to this very day.
Yeah, of course. What is it that made you decide to yourself, you know, I've gone around and I've rang the bell and beat the drum for another gin brand. Now I'm going to make my own gin.
That was a moment really when I was working and helping Alan Katz develop a couple of gin recipes at New York Distilling. And that was the moment I had this epiphany. I'm like, I have a vision, a very strong vision. I have of what I think a great cocktail gin would be. But the other inspiration was actually Sasha Petrosky, who said, we need to make a sort of jack of all trades cocktail gin. You know, something that's got a bit of Plymouth in there, a bit of Tanqueray, you know, like throw in all of it, but it goes in the well and it works with all cocktails. And that was his idea. I mean, it was his idea to call the gin Ford's gin as well. And it was his idea to put the jasmine in it for the reasons that we use jasmine in flower. So he played a very integral role in the early days, you know, of inspiring me. You know, that guy was every time I met with him, he was a constant entrepreneur in his thought process, crazy idea after crazy idea, whether it was create a clothing line 1 week, a coffee shop that only sells coffee from Ethiopia. It was constantly something that was very special and forward thinking, you know, because how hipster is a coffee shop that only sells Ethiopian coffee today? That would be a massive business, but I think it failed for him back then. But, you know, but he would get together with me. We would...
Ahead of his time.
Yeah. But he helped me, you know, find my confidence and my voice in making my own gin.
I mean, yeah, that's awesome. He was integral in creating San Antonio Cocktail Conference, which is a great charitable event now. Mm-hmm. You know, they raise a toast to him at Bohannon's every year at the thing. And it's a great... He was an inspiration in a lot of ways to a lot of people.
So many. and I often think of him as ground zero for the cocktail movement. You know, Milk and Honey was 2000.
Yeah. And also being very generous with his ideas and knowledge and enthusiasm is something that up until, you know, cocktail bar came into the play, it wasn't really a thing that any industry did so much. There wasn't a lot of like openness and mentorship and just honesty and kind of community in that way. And I can't think of any other community other than maybe like... No, I can't.
Yeah, no.
Right.
Because the closest thing you could think of to beverage would be food, but it's
not
that's
same.
Very cutthroat. It's kind of the opposite a lot of times. So.
Having dealt with both sides, it's not the same at all.
No, it's very interesting. The bartender has hospitality because they're front of house as well, so they don't get into that cutthroat mode. They're a people pleasers, and they want people to smile, and they want to see that happen. And that, in you know, makes us less competitive almost, you know?
Yeah.
It really does, I think. You know, we're like, oh, I'll help you out. Oh, here's an idea.
And also a lot of people helped you out with the design of the bottle, which I know that it was designed by a bunch of bartenders to put their input in. Has two different, like, lips on the neck, so you can easily grab it out of the well. There's an indented ring around the middle of the bottle, so you can hold it with the label out. On the side, there's embossed measurements for doing inventory. It's a liter bottle, so you can actually, like, quickly reference that when you're doing inventory. Also, the labels come off very easily. There's a certain kind of adhesive that comes off without it being sticky, so there's no residue. So you can take off the labels quickly, refill it with juices, batches,
syrups, just, what have you.
I'm gonna go home and you can do this in your voice. This is amazing.
I love it because, like, so my background is in design and mostly print design, but, like, I've always been a huge enthusiast of architecture and, like, industrial design. So whenever this process was happening with the design of this bottle, I was like, this is fucking cool. It's like really thinking about the industry and, you know, sharing that input and building that community vibe kind of really, like, manifest itself into a physical product, which is amazing.
It is funny that, you know, I didn't ever think in my wildest dreams I would get to design a bottle. Yeah. I got all of these stock bottles.
Sure.
Handed them out to bartenders and said, which one's the best? And of course, everyone's like, well, this one's got the best neck, this one's got the best... I'm like, oh, damn, I'm going to have to make a bottle.
Yeah. Right, and then pick all those pieces and put them together.
Yeah.
Like you did with the gin itself.
Yes, exactly.
You reached out to all those flavor profiles that you enjoyed in the gins that were on the shelf already. You combine them in such a way to make a gin that's unique, but it has all those characteristics that you like. You built the...
You know, I want
Frankenstein's monster.
Yes. I want my martini to taste like a martini, you know, like I'm having a gin martini. Oh, that tastes like a gin martini.
Well, we're talking all about the bottle. Talk about what's inside the bottle of just the traditional Fords gin, and then we'll take a break and come back and talk about this new bottle you have sitting here on the bar.
Yeah, 45 proof, 9 botanicals. It's half of the recipe is juniper, you know, gin now in juniper flavor. I wanted it to have an abundance of juniper. A lot of citrus because that brings brightness. There's grapefruit, lemon, orange, 2 florals in it. Orris, which is very common in a lot of gins, but we put jasmine flower, as mentioned earlier, and then just 2 spices that sort of bring sort of a sort of feeling of sweetness, but it's still a dry gin, and that's cassia bark, which is a lot like cinnamon, and angelica, which is a very dominant flavor in a lot of my favorite martini gins. It brings a sort of front of palate. And so we throw all of that in a 500-liter still, 15 hours. We use a lot of botanicals to get a lot of oil so that it has good viscosity, and that makes it a good mixing gin, in my opinion, because you want to keep a lot of oil content so that it's got good viscosity when you sip and have a silky martini, right, and good in stirred drink. So genuinely just made as a classic genuinely. London dry gin.
Genuinely.
Oh, no, we should make this a gin pun.
Oh, yeah.
Let the games be gin.
It was ginstrumental in making that gin. You know, 45 proof, you know, just a nice high proof so that, you know, when it mixes, it doesn't dilute too much.
Outstanding. So that's the standard Fords gin, but then we've got something to talk about when we come back from the break with Simon Ford, and also got Ed Rudisell from Shift Drink in here. We're going to chat with him some more as well. Hang on.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Shaxbury Cider, who believe cider can be daring, complex, and eminently drinkable. Located in Vergennes, Vermont, Shaxbury make a broad offering of ciders, from the bright and fruity rosé to inventive small-batch wild apple fermentation. Each fall, Shaxbury takes to the hills of Vermont to forage for the wild and forgotten fruit that make up their Lost Apple Project. Shaxbury, producer of the first American-made Petnat cider, continues to experiment every year with limited edition ciders designed to spotlight locally foraged fruit. To learn more, visit Shaxbury.com or follow them on Instagram at Shaxbury. Rewind, erase, forget my face. I know someone that's here, something remains, something you don't know. You have got a heart.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on heritageradionetwork.org. Souther's opening up the bottle that we were just talking about, but it's...
Well, we haven't talked about this bottle yet.
We haven't talked about it. We talked... Well, I said the bottle, not the juice.
Oh, true. We did talk about the bottle.
How dare you, sir. All that bad flight situation you had got you real jumpy, edgy.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit about the original Forged Gin before the break. Why don't you tell us what we are about to try here in the studio today?
This is very exciting for me because this is a world exclusive. This only just got bottled.
Well, that's very exciting for us then.
Yeah.
It's
world exclusive right here on Heritage Radio Network, your source of food and drink information. 2019, 10 years of Heritage Radio. There. I did my plug for the day.
So, as folklore would have it, the Merchant Navy of England would take on board rum, as Ed knows very well, and gin. And the gin was usually reserved for the officers, and rum went everywhere in grog, as we know, and we all got groggy. So we've created Officers Reserve. It's sort of inspired by the idea of a Navy strength or an overproof, but just this assumption that if you were going to have an overproof gin on board a ship, well, it was probably in a barrel. What kind of barrel? Maybe Madeira, maybe port. And in this instance, it's a Montillado sherry cask.
Awesome.
And what I love about it, this is something I'm very proud of, and you're going to hear that from me now, but what I love about it is the extra ABV holds more botanicals, and what it really holds is more juniper. There's this like beautiful juniper nose, and then the bitterness you might get, well, the Amontillado kind of cut it a little bit. So it's strong, it's full-flavored, it's very full-bodied. I hope you like it.
The room smells great after pouring after pouring a bunch of gin.
I'm so excited about this. This is one of the best, you know, processes and products I've ever worked on. You know, I remember like getting the barrels first when they first arrived and testing them, and we just had one barrel of this and one barrel of that, and trying different ABVs in the different barrels and different lengths of period of time in the barrel and testing and blending, and then going, we love this one. And then buying 26 barrels, and that was like exciting too, you know. And,
right.
And they never turned up, of course, right? You know, they would have never turned up if there was a government shutdown, but they turned up eventually. Sure. We filled them. It's only 3 weeks of age because gin should be gin. It shouldn't be overpowered by oak. And so it's just a flash, kind of rested is the technical or non-technical term.
Did you say 3 weeks?
That's it.
Wow. You can really pick up a lot.
Yeah.
It's that overproof, right? So it's a solvent. It's doing its job on the inside of that barrel.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, the first thing, it smells juniper, right?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. And the room smells amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's got this, like, softness on the backside.
It's rich. I think bartenders are going to really appreciate working with this.
And it's warm, too.
Which is good when the weather's like it is.
True.
For sure.
Yeah.
This winter's probably never going to end here in New York City.
Well,
definitely need this.
I got an elbow from Sauceton over here with a thumbs up. Like, yeah.
I actually think this is a gin that rum lovers are going to like too. Gin tiki is a thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Brian Miller was one of the first to, he came up with the Winchester, which was the gin zombie that like blew my mind. I was like, all right, I get this now. This makes sense. Now we're going to head in this direction. So there's been a lot of really great modern... There's also quite a few, you know, classic gin tiki drinks, but it's not what it's not what the public usually thinks of is tiki.
The Saturn.
They're always thinking...
Saturns.
Yeah.
Singapore Slings.
Yeah. But they don't really... They really run the whole canon of, like, tiki drinks as being predominantly rum. But gin is great, especially with things like passion fruit, you know, and... You know, the sharpness of like the botanicals and then the brightness of passion fruit always works really well together. It's one of my favorite because especially
agree, passion fruit in anything.
Dude, cardamom and passion fruit are one of my favorite like flavor combinations. So you get a gin that has like a lot of cardamom in it mixed with passion fruit and you're like halfway there.
Ding, ding.
You know,
they in London, they always call passion fruit the MSG. of the cocktail world, you know. I remember here for so long it was.
I'm going to use that
Saint Germain, wasn't it? Here, that was, you know, that was the cocktail the bartender's ketchup, and now it's in London. It was always the passion fruit.
Yeah. Sneak a little in there, and it changes everything.
Yeah.
what drove you to say, you know, I spent all this time and all this energy and all this effort, and I made this gin that I adore and I think is perfect, and now I'm going to make something else. I've created perfection. Let me fix it.
So I you know, it's the world knows me by now and knows I love gin, and I like lots of gin. I don't just like my own. I would think the world would be a very boring place if I was just drinking.
Agreed.
One gin, right?
In fact, I'm going to pause you there. I have trouble with so many brand ambassadors who try and tell me that they only drink their own juice. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That makes no. That's not why you got into this business. That's not what got you where you are. Like, that's just, you're fucking lying to me and yourself.
Yeah,
100%.
Like, I think it's just a bunch of bullshit. Anyway,
and you have to evolve and know your own category, but it's, yeah. Then you have to know the industry too.
That's like a great chef who only eats at his own restaurant. Man, you got to go out and see what's going on. What are people doing? Taste other things. Get inspired.
Our friend of the show and our friends in real life, Willie Shine. He said we were hanging out last time he was on the show. We went to, Skinny Dennis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, honky tonk. And we were drinking Lone Stars and taking shots of well tequila and just talking shop. And he said something to me when I, because I was going full time with Brooklyn Gin. And I was like, hey, man, what can you give me, like, as far as advice for becoming, like, a really great brand ambassador? He's like, all right, two things. One, he's like, become an expert on the category, not on your own bottle.
Yep.
Right. And he's like, you know, gin is an aromatic spirit. Become an expert on botanicals. And he's like, don't even worry about your own brand. Because, like, if you learn about the category more and then all the botanicals that are typically found, and there's a lot of them. Yes. So, and this is coming from the dude who, like, runs Jägermeister.
Exactly.
So he's like, that's what he did. He's like, I'm going to try to do my Willie Shine. I never thought I'd work for.
Yeah, that's close. That's good.
And he's like, I never thought I would be working for Jägermeister, but he was, like, so interested by it. And so he just started learning about all these different botanicals.
All the things that are in the bottle.
Yeah, totally.
So
yeah.
You're a lover of gin. You want a lot of gins in your life, so you created a new one. Great. Talk about it.
You know, Ford's was, laying a stake in the ground and going, this is us making a good classic London dry gin, you know, and hopefully one that people would be proud to put in their bars and one that could stand alongside the great London dry gins that we already have in the world. And I think we achieved that. And now that's a platform in which to leap. And how can I create new ways to enjoy it? Now, overproof is one way. Overproof in age is one, and it's not really reinventing the wheel, but I probably wouldn't have released it from a creative point of view if I didn't think it tasted so damn good, and I really love it, right?
It's quite good.
And, you know, maybe there's other ways, you know, to now enjoy it. You know, I think that it would be fun to make a slow gin because, you know, slow's delicious and everyone's slow gin always runs out. You know, so when the other ones run out, there'll be some Fords available, hopefully, right? And then start to get innovative and hopefully prove ourselves as not just one gin, but a company that you can come to for different innovative gins. So I would, you know, if you had a bar that only served one cocktail and only served one dish of food, you know, in the same way, I'm like, I can't just have one gin for the rest of my life.
In-N-Out Burger?
Yeah.
Basically.
There's exceptions to the rule.
Oh, yeah, I go there all the time.
There's always an exception to the rule.
I know, and if Ford's could be the In-N-Out Burger of gins, I would take it any day.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, of course.
What do you new think labeling of right there, Ford's, the In-N-Out Burger of gins.
What do you think about...
animal style.
I want to get your... Yeah, totally. It's got to be animal style. I find it interesting in this current era of lower ABV cocktails becoming like bigger, like a more acceptable thing. You see a lot more of like low ABV sections, no ABV, to come out with an overproof gin during this period is
bucking
pretty...
You're bucking the trend.
No, I like it though because honestly, to me, I love a 50-50 martini. But then, and the reason why I like it is because we have so many great vermouths out there these days. We have hundreds. I mean, how many do you have? How many SKUs do you have behind the bar in Amore Margo?
At any given time, we have at least 16, but we rise above that and we ebb back below that because my space can't carry that many.
Right.
But I change them all the time. But it's always a minimum of 16.
If you look back at your look back at your inventory sheet and your section must be like at least 60.
Yeah, at least. Right? At least.
So it's great to explore. It's a great way to explore vermouth, but then also being able to pair it up with a nice botanical gin. So to me, this would make a perfect 50-50 martini, especially with the Amontillado Sherry involvement there. I mean, come on.
See, there's your low-proof thing. Yeah. Yeah, Amontillado is the low-proof part.
Yeah.
and I like this. You know, I like a lot of these low ABV products. I like a lot of these no ABV products. And they all taste really good when they're mixed with gin.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of like...
Absolutely.
You know,
it's good, but let's make it great. And let's mix it with gin.
And don't forget, you can still make a low ABV cocktail, even with sure. high ABV
That's
products.
That's what I'm saying. That's why
based on volume. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And invert it like the original Martinez, sure. like to 2 ounces vermouth to one. I always do overproof gin when I do a Martinez because it's vermouth heavy. And especially if you're using a big, bold, like Carpana Antica vermouth, you want to have something that's going to really cut back into the mix and balance it out.
Sure.
So this would be great in that too.
This juice is delicious.
Cheers.
Yeah, indeed.
So how long have you been doing this madness?
Oh, God, I
saw Ambassador. You've been ambassador for how long?
Since, say, 1998. I know. I'm very old these days. I became an international brand ambassador in 2002, and that's right. when I first came to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it went so well that in 2006, they said, why don't you move there? And I don't know if that's them trying to get rid of me to
Probably.
The U.S.
Probably. <Yeah. laughs>
But it gave me a great opportunity to come to one of the greatest cities on earth, New York, and you can never look that gift horse in the mouth. You know,
sure.
I jumped at it and spent several years in New York loving the city beyond, you know, all recognition. So, you know, God bless being a brand ambassador because it gave me an opportunity I would have probably never gotten in another career.
Yeah, agreed. You know, we can look back over everything you've done and we can see that you've traveled the world, you've met an extensive amount of people, you know, these things enrich your lives just going to places and talking to people, not to mention then, of course, you were literally enriched by money. and then now you're this brand ambassador of your own brand. But what do you think the sustainability of that is? You're gonna constantly be on the road? You live in Nashville now, because everybody does.
And it's affordable, that's why, right?
Affordable, get it?
Oh, the puns continue, I love
it. Yeah. We're genovators around here.
It's funny, I've been toying with this idea called growing irrelevant gracefully, right? As you get older.
Sure, you mentioned that in the email you sent me. And I was like, I want to hear what he's talking about, because I need to maybe subscribe.
Well, at a point, you've gotten all of these great experiences, and you've done all of this work. And you keep doing it because you love it, but, you know, now I have a daughter. And being on the road all the time is you know, even though I love it and I'm addicted to it, I'm not going to lie, it's an addiction. And, it's hard to say no, and I want to be at the next country, and I love that moment when you walk off a plane and you smell a new air, and then you don't know what to expect when you're there. But at the same time, you know, now I feel that I need to be a responsible parent, and someone else should have this opportunity, and if I'm sure. able to give it. And so, you know, as I sort of grow irrelevant, hopefully gracefully, yeah. you know, like as opposed to be like, you know, we've all been in the nightclub and we've seen the guy that we think is too old in the nightclub.
Sure.
it was me.
It's usually staring at the mirror.
Yeah, it was me.
Yeah. And so, you know, I feel like I want to give the opportunity to people coming up from the new generation with all of that energy and give them the opportunities that I once had, you know. And if someone's got that energy and wants to see the world and loves gin or cocktails and spreading the word like I do, that for me is now something I want to pass on.
Where exactly is it that I apply?
is there
a website or something?
I kind of started doing that with Grand Army. At one point, I was like, I can't be behind the bar. First of all, I can't be behind the bar every night because I physically can't do it. It's impossible to
it hurts.
Bar manage, bartend every night, and then do all the ownership stuff too. You know, so like started scaling back the schedule, and then you know, some people were like, "You're never behind the bar." I'm like, "Yeah, check out who is behind the bar. They're the up and comers, and they're awesome. There's a reason why they're working here,
right?
You know."
They
can make you a better drink than I can.
And faster and cleaner.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. The younger generations are learning quicker because there's more access to information and education and training and getting better faster and then innovating quicker. So why not pass things over to them and watch and learn from people younger than yourselves too? You know, I mean, I get great joy in that.
Absolutely.
You know, great
joy. Makes me bitter.
You know,
I totally get it too, and I'm definitely
going back towards the puns with the
yeah, exactly,
of course,
exactly.
always.
I'm gonna adopt this this notion of growing irrelevant gracefully.
That's I mean, but you're also genovative because you wrote a whole book on your iPhone. So
Hey, yeah.
It's impressive, yeah.
No, we all have our talents. I got fast thumbs. So this isn't, you say it's an exclusive. We got to taste it first right here live on air.
Yep, that's not even a real bottle. That's what we call in the biz a sample bottle. So we haven't actually shipped it out of our warehouses yet. So yeah, that's one of the first bottles. I bought it into town for you guys to try.
Excellent.
How long are you
Thank
in town?
You so much.
Till Friday, and then off to Vegas to do a guest bartending shift. You know, I mean,
where at?
It on the Record in Las Vegas. It's a record club type cool. place. You know, I think they got me working two nights, and I have not done two nights in a row in 15 years. I'm preparing the ice packs for my shoulders right now.
Yeah.
I hope that only gin and tonics are served.
It would still hurt me to make that many gin and tonics. Yeah. You know, got to do this and then. Cool.
Are you on the bar anymore?
No, you know, I never spent a lot.
Am I the only one who works the bar?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I've just always have such a great, amazing team around me at all times. So you know, we work off each other really well. But no, like Damon was saying, like there's too much paperwork and ownership stuff that you know occupies a lot of my time.
Right, and I'm sure Simon feels the same way too, as all of us do. When you're in that ownership position, then you start to look around at your teammates, and they're no longer your teammates; they're kind of your children. You have to take care of them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So everything I'm sure the same for all of you. Everything I do for them. Right. When I go to San Antonio Cocktail Conference, that's just to raise the bar of awareness for all the bars that I operate. That's just to point people towards coming into the bar. As more people come in the bar, more money my team makes. Like, but I still am on the bar too, so I'm doing double time. I need to.
There's no
start thinking about backing down.
Yeah, there's no specific way that it needs. There's no guideline to every single way that everything's going to run. It's all case by case.
Yeah.
Just like people, when customers come in the bar, you never know what to expect from them. Same thing when you open a bar or restaurant, you never know what to expect. You can get all the advice in the world from every different direction. Same with opening a spirits company. You're never going to know what to expect. You know, that's what's exciting about it, but it's also fucking frightening. And once you get into it, you're learning the entire time, just on your own. But you have to, again, you know, going back to leaning on the community, that's the most important part.
I got to tell you one thing about a lot of brand ambassadors that I talk to these days. They say, I'm doing one bar shift. I'm holding down a shift. And I'm like, why are you holding down a shift? I mean, this is a hard job. And it's a lot of hours. And their response is always, I want to remain relevant.
Yeah, I keep doing interviews and talks and things like that, and people say, why do you keep doing that? I say, well, I'm doing it for the exposure. And then they say, you know, people die of exposure. Well, I see. Exactly. Journeys in gin. If you were to do a slow gin, where would you procure those? Because that's what is that? The damson plum? Is that what it's called?
It's actually a slow berry.
Oh, the slow berry. Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's related to the damson plum, which is, you know, and they taste very similar. They look very similar. The slow's a lot more bitter, so it often requires a lot more sugar. England would be the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very traditional drink in England.
Damson's kind of always, to me, it's always been more acidic. So it kind of, it's like a sharper or slow. Damson gin versus slow gin. Damson sharper. So it was a little bit rounder and sweeter because of the higher sugar content because of bitterness.
I feel like slow gin, like, let's say even 10 years ago, was kind of everywhere, but now it's not. So maybe the time is right.
Yeah, and it's warm in the slow gin fizz. Yeah. Was the slow comfortable screw made with slow gin? Because is that going to have a comeback?
I have a slow gin story.
Everything's going to have a comeback.
So speaking of brand ambassadorship, so I've always thought that and like the way I've learned from a lot of brand ambassadors is that it's not really about like just being there at the bar with a bottle of gin, you know, or being at all the events and doing all the stuff. Let's get into that.
We had something else around here.
The way you treat people, it's through like kind of thoughtful gestures, you know, like I go to like. There's one night where I was hanging out with Jan Warren when we worked together, and like we went by and picked up a pizza and delivered it to the Up and Up late night because we were like, it probably wants some food, you know, things like that. One day I was at, you remember this? I was at Prime Meats, and it was my birthday,
yep.
And you show up with a old bottle of Red Horse Slow Gin.
Yes, that's right.
Bottle from like the 40s. or yes. 50s maybe.
Yeah.
And because you knew that I was like...
into bottle and glass and everything. Yeah, that's and right,
it,
yeah.
I had a horse on it, so you really know how to read your crowd. So, and I was like, man, you know, you just dropped it off. You're like, all I want to do is bring this to you, say happy birthday. I hope you have a good shift. And I was like, that was the coolest thing in the world, man. Like, this is my guy. What a great ambassador.
How many people have you ever met, though, that are like, that's Simon Ford? I don't know, man.
You know, like, that's true.
Have you ever heard anyone say anything negative?
Yeah, I thought about that after a while. I was like, yeah, maybe he just has a bunch of old bottles that he needs to recycle in his house. And, like, he just gives him his quote-unquote thoughtful gifts.
Well, he just handed me a bottle. Simon, tell me what you just handed me. I'm going to crack it open and pour some.
That is a thoughtful gift.
Yeah, that is a very thoughtful gift.
It's a bottle of liquid delight that will never get sold. It's actually something we made for our friends and our friends only.
How do we get one?
It's yours. This is the bottle for the bar.
How do we get one?
This is the gift for the bar. There are 1,330 bottles made. We selected an 8-year-old barrel, American whiskey barrel of tequila made by the Vivanco family, a 10-year-old. They both had what we thought was still this strong agave flavor fighting through the oakiness. And we're like, okay, we'll blend those two and we'll bottle it. And, you know, we did hand-blown glass down there in Mexico, and we made it about 2 years ago. And then we were like, what are we going to do with this? And we decided that the best thing we could do with such a small amount is, instead of, like, send the armies out and try and sell it, let's give it to our friends.
And what an amazing gesture.
You're peach. And it's a gorgeous label, by the way. I'm staring at the label. I want to take a picture for Instagram. Go check out our Instagram after the show.
Yeah, it's so good. The Vivanco family that made this tequila, they've been growing agave since 1922 for five generations. They're up in the highlands. They make very artisanal tequila, and allowing us into their cellars, and, you know, and to look at the barrels and taste everything, and the CRT were there looking over our shoulder, making notes of how much we were taking and funneling out of barrels, doing this tasting and selecting. I mean, again, if you think about those moments when you can say, I love my job.
Yeah, yeah, that's
one of those moments. And right now, this moment, being able to share it with you, I love my job.
Wow,
well, cheers to that, you big sweetheart.
So why did you guys make the decision to only give this to friends rather than produce it? I'm sorry, to market it.
The truth is the company is becoming the Forged Gin Company. We set out with lots of products, and that was a difficult mission for an entrepreneur to try and be in the vodka business and try and be in the tequila business and the rum business, which are all difficult, yeah. And the gin business. Now, gin was my wheelhouse and my comfort zone because of my past, and that seems to be where we've had our success. So we're sort of edging our way into being the Forged Gin Company, and so we make this tequila to really, you know, sort of be a good partner to our tequila that we currently sell. But then we were like, if we're not really going to be focusing on it, instead of selling it, this could be a really nice gesture for the people that have looked after us over the years.
Right.
Certainly the people that have looked after the products that we might, you know, fade out slowly, and to say thank you, and you know, in the same time, here we are concentrating on gin by bringing out a new gin, and sort of clearly signaling that our future is going to be all about gin and innovation in gin and doing fun things with gin.
Outstanding.
Ginnovation.
Yeah.
So let me back up a little bit, because, like, you started off with Caña Brava.
Yeah.
Which is the 3-year Blanco rum, right? Then you had, you had the Cabeza.
Yep.
Yep. And then Ellsbury Duck, which is your vodka.
Yep.
Vodka pays the bills, yeah. Sometimes.
The duck bills. Yeah, the duck bills. We're on a pun. Right? See?
And then you came out with an even more aged Caña Brava for a while, right? Which was more of like a kind of limited...
Yeah, we made a small amount of cases, yeah.
So, I was just thinking from like a business point of view, and like as far as like botanical sourcing and stuff like that, just from working with all these different parts of the world and different distilleries and things like that, you must have really expanded your the creative mindset as far as being able to innovate new products with gin, you know, just because of like being in different countries where you're like, oh man, there's this fruit that I never tried before, but you know what, the peel from it would be incredible in a gin, and it would be super cool to have it. It's like some weird unknown thing that could like be part of a selling tool for it. You know what I mean? Especially, I mean, right. you know what I'm saying, because you deal with bitters, and like there's all kinds of different stuff. I mean, even when you think about
the
like
more things you see, the more sparks you that you create.
Yeah, and even when you think about like the old like spice trade, and you say everything coming from all over the world, and like even like chartreuse, like having like 130 different things that like you're like, wait, that comes from where? How did these monks get that? You know, but over time, you find these things and you develop your own like kind of category of like categorical like spirits that come from the different parts of the world, and then you're like, all right, this can go with this place. And even if you're like, oh, I was in Spain and then I was in Uruguay, and like there was a spice there and then one there, and I flew right from there to there, and it's like, oh man, I just did some mixologizing right there, like right. just from getting on a plane from sure. one spot to another. I always find that interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Especially, like, coming from bartending backgrounds, you always, like, pick stuff up along the way, you know? Just in the same way that, you know, especially, like, collecting rum. I mean, when you're into rum, you become a collector, right?
It's a rabbit hole, man.
When you're into tiki, you become a collector of rum.
Yeah, it's almost unstoppable.
From all over the world, because it can come from anywhere in the world. And right. then when you find it, you grab it. And then it's something that is with you, and it's part of your canon of
knowledge. And that Venn diagram of like tiki and rum can get quite expensive.
You know? Yeah. Right? Totally.
Like, you've got all the paraphernalia and all the bottles and then the unicorn bottles. And yeah, it's.
I said this to Ed when I saw him last week in his town. I said, tiki fans. You know, they're the Dungeons and Dragons fans of the booze world.
Yeah, we completely are. That's totally accurate.
I almost just did a spit take on this microphone.
They turn up with their shirts, you know, and their uniform. And,
yeah,
you know,
we've got a rum uniform. That's right.
Simon, where are you? You're going from here to Vegas. Are you on the road for a bit, or are you going back to Nashville after that? Or
From Vegas, I'm going to Ukiah, which is where we have our warehouses, and we do bottling at Shaw Bay.
Pretty close to where I live out there.
Yeah, maybe I'll meet you in San Francisco. I was thinking I'll come into San Francisco and leave, and we're finishing off the bottling of the Officer's Reserve. So we're doing that for 3 days, and then back to Nashville.
Limited release, Officer's Reserve, finished 3 weeks in Sherry Cask, Amontillado Sherry Cask. Will it be distributed wherever you are?
Yes, it's going to be all over the U.S. and any country that we are currently sending.
But not a lot for anybody.
Not a lot. It's a.
So snap it up if you see it.
Yeah, get a bottle and enjoy it.
Yeah. Enjoy it. Yes, this is not for collecting. This is not a museum. This is for drinking. This tequila, by the way, is fucking delicious.
Yeah,
it tastes like everything I want in a tequila right now.
So full transparency, I did just try this last week, and absolutely. Yeah. So we took it over to the Inferno Room and had.
It's so good. It's so dark and caramely, and
but it still
retains that sort of grassy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coffee for sure, and I don't drink coffee, so I'm really digging this.
Yeah,
I mean, I love coffee, but I can't have it. Can't
have caffeine. There's like eucalyptus coming through there in the back.
Yeah. You know, this was purely a passion project, and you know, almost freedom in business for me will be the moment when I can do more passion projects, because that is the true fun that you can have if your business is going well.
Simon, just out of curiosity, how many? So it's 86 company turning into Forged Gin company, transitioning into Forged Gin company. That is, how many states in the United States are you distributed in at this point?
It's about 30. So it's not everywhere yet, you know.
Okay.
And most of our business is concentrated around Texas, Illinois,
New York,
and California.
Yeah. And how many countries?
That's where the fun is. I mean, we don't sell a lot outside of the U.S. But we go into those places, and it's the three or four bars that you want to visit are the ones that have ordered it, and it's
perfect.
Really nice, right? So we're about 15 countries. I mean, last year I got back from China, and that was a new launch. So, and that was, it was sort of an incredible thing to see because I went to a
Did you do that with Louder?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris took me around and we, you know, we did a couple of guest bartending shifts together, you know.
He made most of the drinks.
He made most of the drinks. I went out with the bartenders afterwards. He got up for a jog. We met for breakfast.
Perfect.
I can't wait till he gets old. I can't wait till that kid is old.
But that was a lot of fun, and China was a fascinating place because it's emerging as a market for our industry, like it had never been before. So it's all brand new and it's all exciting and it's shiny. And there's this city that Chris took me to called Shenzhen, and it 30 years ago was 30,000 people and now it's 30 million people.
Yeah,
and it's
insane.
It looks like Blade Runner, and they're opening up bars every other day. And so, of course, there's a real need for education in spirits. And so, of course, people like Chris are out there doing that. And watching what they do and watching it emerge as quickly as it is, I'm like, wow. It's almost like the kids with learning everything. It took me 20 years to learn in one afternoon on the internet.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
Right. Yeah.
That's what it is like, watching...
It's learning. Well, this has been a great show. Yeah, thanks, Simon, for being on with us. Thanks, Ed, for sitting in and chiming in when you can. What a great time we've had talking to you about your life as an ambassador, creating that role, really, in the United States, your time with Ford's Gin. Thanks for bringing us this beautiful, sexy-ass bottle of tequila. I think that's going to go away fast. as I stare at it longingly.
Right. Don't.
You are longingly staring at that bottle.
We're going to have to hide that one in the back of the bar back here. So, so no one taps into it too much. Right. That one's got to... This is such a great... It's a very, very special thing to just
Plus, I feel special
out.
That he gave it to us. He said he only gives it to his friends.
Exactly.
I love you guys. There's no two ways about it.
So I just want to slowly get through this bottle, okay? I think this is how we start every one of our shows from now on.
Right on.
Before we go on the air, we have a little nip
of
this.
Okay, I like it. Till it's gone.
Till it's gone.
So that'd be, a month?
Yeah, exactly.
One last question I want to ask you. Are we going to see you down in New Orleans at Tails this year?
You are.
Yeah, definitely. Outstanding.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. I enjoyed it last year. It was quite...
Man, I think last year was my best year.
Yeah.
Things were really clicking.
Everyone was just...
Jazzed to be there. The environment was great. I loved that whole thing they had set up over at the Athletic Club, which is a beautiful facility anyway. I used to live down there.
And it was a beautiful commemorative moment for John as well. And I felt that
huge.
They stepped up and did something special for someone that everyone in this industry loves so much.
Indeed.
A larger than life character that obviously we all saw miss.
That presentation at the awards was a
big
time memorial.
I'm actually getting emotional talking about it right now.
Yeah.
I know, me too. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing we're almost off the air.
Yeah, a bunch of softies. All right, well. Really great to have you guys in the studio. Thanks so much, and tune in next time for the next great episode of The Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network.
Absolutely. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Want more of The Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform, and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.